This is the Fix Your Sciatica Podcast.
What are the best foods or what nutrients do we need to recover from sciatica pain? This is a question I actually see through a lot of different message boards, and it really brought this question to my attention because when I was looking at these message boards and figuring out what people were suggesting, it made me really curious as to, are there foods or nutrients that are actually be helpful in regards to sciatica pain? And so as I was doing a little bit of research, found some pretty interesting studies, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But sciatica itself, for you listeners, is irritation of the sciatic nerve. And what's going to be important, especially when you're going through your research and trying to figure out how can I fix this pain that I'm in, or you're working with a provider like myself or you know, anyone out there, we have to identify, why is this nerve irritated in the first place? And we know that irritation of the sciatic nerve can be caused centrally in the spine, or can actually be caused peripherally by either some sort of tight muscles in your hip, tight muscles in your calf. And so we have to understand that there are differences, in that when you are dealing with mostly like spinal injury or spinal irritation, we're really addressing more of the central nervous system, especially if we're dealing with something at the level of the spine. But once that nerve actually exits the spine, we transition to a peripheral nervous system. And the reason why they're separate is that there's different mechanisms in which each system actually heals. So another thing that you need to consider when it comes to what are the best foods or things that we are going to be helping us out or in regards to healing. And being that I'm just a measly physical therapist, but want to help other folks, I thought it'd be great. Why not get an expert in food, nutrition, micronutrients, those things that will actually fuel us, that we can put in our bodies that will help facilitate healing. So today, special guest is Jamie Campbell, Jamie Campbell Nutrition, food, micronutrients, macronutrients extraordinaire. Jamie, thank you so much for being on today's episode.
Yeah, thank you for such an awesome introduction. And I'm super excited to be here.
Let's just say that this episode has been a long time coming. I'm trying to find someone who can properly explain a lot of how the things that we put in our body can actually interact with how we feel. And you have some pretty extensive experience working with clients all throughout the world, and you've had some pretty amazing success stories. So before we get into actually talking about the nutrients that are necessary for optimal healing, tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm Jamie Campbell. I'm a licensed dietitian nutritionist with a master's in clinical nutrition and trained within the functional medicine model. I run my own private practice where I offer one-to-one nutrition consulting. I also do a couple of signature group programs specifically geared towards gut health. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm pretty certain that some of the subsequent questions will definitely lend me to talking a little bit more into that. So the approach, especially the functional medicine approach, combines evidence-based nutrition with functional medicine principles. And what that essentially is that we practitioners that are functionally trained focus on identifying and addressing root causes of health issues rather than to be treating or masking symptoms. And ultimately, my goal in private practice is to support my clients towards optimal health and well-being through tailored nutrition strategies, considering factors such as their unique nutritional health needs, lifestyle, genetics, goals, etc.
Beautiful explanation. And listeners, Jamie's contact information will actually be shared in the show notes today. I'm also going to be asking her again about how people can get in touch with her. But awesome intro, awesome credentials. I'm a huge fan of functional medicine, the functional medicine model. I actually had the opportunity to meet with my functional medicine doctor. This episode is going to be airing in September. So here we are and recorded in August, and I had the opportunity to speak with them, and a huge fan of the work that you guys do. So before we go into like really the breakdowns, nitty gritty in regards to like nutrition and sciatica, I'm going to ask you like a really broad question, but like, why does nutrition have such a huge role in how we function and how we live?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It's something I think that we all should really think about. So nutrition is the foundation of our health. And I truly believe and view nutrition as, or food, I would say, as medicine. You know, every cell within our body relies on nutrients to function properly, from, for instance, providing energy, from supporting immune function, from balancing hormones and repairing tissues, from nerve conductivity, if we were talking about sciatica and neuropathy. What we eat directly influences our physical, mental, and emotional health. In functional medicine, as mentioned, we see food as medicine, and what you eat, which happens multiple times a day, can contribute to disease or be a powerful tool to healing and vitality. And so that's the reason why ultimately we should be thinking about nutrition as a thing to leverage to improve our overall well-being.
Right on. Great explanation. And so this leads me on to my next question. I'll start off with a little story. So just recently had a blood and stool test, and one thing that her provider actually shared with me was that although some of my, say, like iron levels or some of my lab values were good, they kind of fell within the normal range, they might have actually been low specifically for me. So this is like a multi-part question, but the first part is, tell us a little bit more about the concepts of how, the concepts of like having too much or too little of a specific nutrient. How do people, like, how do we actually end up determining what those norms are? And then how do we end up determining what those numbers are in relation to our own health?
Yeah, so maybe I'll bifurcate my answer, and I'll answer more in terms of the concept around too much or too little nutrients. And then I'll answer the second one in terms of like maybe optimal ranges and ranges that we as individuals should be striving for. So the first one being, what is the concept between too much and too little? So our bodies function all about the point of our bodies, or not the point, but the outcome, the goal of our bodies is to always try to maintain stasis, equilibrium, balance, right? So both deficiency and excess can perturb this equilibrium that our bodies are always trying to fight towards. For instance, too much, I'm just going to give you specific nutrient examples. Too little magnesium can lead to things like muscle cramping, anxiety, fatigue, whereas too much of something, say calcium, can increase the risk of kidney stones, of cardiovascular events, right? So it's not just about meeting the recommended daily intake. It's about getting the right amount for your specific needs based on your current health status. So your status now in this day and age can be very different from what it was, let's say 20, 30, however many years ago. And so that is constantly a fluid situation and thing to assess. The goal is to optimize nutrient levels, not just to bypass disease. It is to live as optimally and vibrantly as possible, which is, I think that's what segues me to your second question, which is the difference between conventional reference ranges and what I like to call functional and optimal reference ranges, right? You had mentioned that you went in and got your blood work done, and your levels may not be ideal for your current needs, even if they may fall within conventional reference ranges. What I say to my clients is the conventional reference ranges for labs are like 5 football fields long, right? And as long as you fall within the goalposts of 5 football fields, you are deemed healthy or normal by conventional practice. But the client or the patient, as I've come to realize over and over again, feels like garbage. They feel suboptimal. They feel like trash, even though they fall within normal conventional ranges. These normal ranges are actually the average within the population, which also includes unhealthy individuals. And optimal ranges are based within healthy populations. But so long as you're within these ranges, you're considered fine. Now then it goes back to, let's say, iron specifically. What's normal for you or for one person may be deficient for you based on your needs. If you're a very active individual, if you have any genetic predisposition for the need of excess iron, going back to gut specifically, potentially there might be something that is impacting proper absorption. So you need to focus even more greatly on iron consumption. I liken it to a pregnant woman who, you know, societally understands that she requires more for the need of a growing fetus, right? This increased need is understood and accepted by the general population, but that same consideration and concept is true even on an individual basis as well. One person may need more based on their underlying predisposition, whereas someone else may need less. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I really appreciate it, especially as you kept like emphasize, like especially in the practice of medicine, is like you're treating the person in front of you. You're yes, it is important for us to have these norms and these ranges, because in a way, like in order for us as a medical industry, in order for us to be able to make some large recommendations, if we're basing it based off of the evidence and research, that research needs to happen in the first place, right? And so they're trying to create as much as they can an emulation of what the world is like, or like patient population is like, to see what are those results, what are those dosages. So, and but the reality is the fact that we're all individuals, we all have various different metabolic needs based on a whole multitude of factors. So I do really appreciate you say it's really dependent on you and the person and based on where you're at.
Absolutely. And it's what is ideal for an individual should take into account, you know, a comprehensive assessment of their history, of their symptom state, of their lifestyle, of their medication use, you know, alongside lab values that are being presented. But I think I'll also say too, you know, our conventional reference ranges is based on an ever-growing sick population. And so do we really want to use that as our barometer of how well we are doing, you know, or do we want to strive for better? Or do we want to strive for more?
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit PTPatientAdvocate.com and book your free call with our experts. Yeah, that makes total sense. And so in regards to the application of a population who is suffering, so let's talk about sciatica pain and specifically peripheral nerve injuries. Listeners, I remember earlier in this episode, I was saying that sciatica pain is actually irritation of the sciatic nerve, but that the sciatic nerve and pain presentation could actually be due to the central nervous system. So it could be, if you've been dealing with this pain for a long period of time, you might be dealing with some what we call central sensitization. Your brain, although your pain is very real, your brain is still very much in a habit of actually interpreting these signals from your body as pain signals. It can also be an actual irritation of the spinal cord. So you're having like a very irritated disc or arthritis, or it can be more of a peripheral nerve injury where once the nerves actually exit your spine and exit the nerve roots and pass through your hip and the rest of your body, we can actually irritate the sciatic nerve through there as well as the branches. So for today's episode, we'll talk a little bit more about peripheral nerve injuries, because in regards to like, is my sciatic pain can be related more centrally to my spinal cord or more peripheral. Peripheral nerve injuries in regards to sciatica, you're going to be looking more so at like buttock pain, piriformis pain, pain that actually occurs when you're putting a lot of pressure on the nerve itself. So that's what we're going to be focusing on specifically today. And it actually led me to bringing up some of the questions that I've been asking Jamie throughout today's episode. And throughout my research, one of the big things I was trying to figure out, I literally just went on Google and I searched nutrition and sciatica, typed in the term NCDI, which is PubMed. And a lot of it was really just the role of a specific nutrient and its effect on these types of injuries. And I didn't really see much in regards to a deficiency in X nutrient leads to that. But would it be safe to assume, and this is a question I didn't get a chance to send to you, but would it be safe to assume that if we're saying supplemental nutrient X mm-hmm. helps with this pain, would it be safe to assume that that patient population was also deficient in that said nutrient?
I think the question is more of like, is it a causative effect to the peripheral pain and neuropathy, or is it something we can focus on as an adjunct to the you know, clinical intervention that's being provided for the individual that suffers with this issue? Not so much that it is a causative. I don't think that there's enough data or research showing that. However, I think because of a culmination of issues that normally these individuals suffer with, it has been shown through research that potentially that there is a bank of nutrients that tend to be deficient over and over again in these individuals.
It makes total sense. And you brought that up because oftentimes, I mean, it really is dependent on context, right? In regards to what is this person going through? What's the life that they're living as well? What are they putting in their body? And so it's a multitude of factors. And to what's hard, especially when you're trying to research, is that you try to whittle down all this information down to like one specific thing that's going to be addressing every single issue. But the reality is that we're humans, we're dynamic beings. We need multiple factors at work to help us recover and feel our best. But in regards to deficiencies, right, especially the clients that you work with, the folks who have been dealing with, say, like chronic pain or like neuropathies, what are some of those deficiencies that you have observed in your practice?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'll preface and say, like, by the lens in which I approach this situation is more of like, what raw materials do we need to focus on to help your body do the thing it needs to do to heal, right? And so, like, what are these raw materials? What are these nutrients? And then you can kind of extrapolate that in terms of, like, potential deficiencies. So for individuals dealing with peripheral nerve injury, peripheral nerve pain, I'd say common deficiencies could include B vitamins, particularly B12, B6, B1, all those essential for nerve health, especially keeping the myelin sheath around nerves nice and healthy so that conductivity can happen efficiently. Low levels of omega-3 fatty acids, magnesium specifically plays a role, and I'll just give you more like more context. It plays a role in managing things like sciatica or nerve pain because it helps to relax muscles and reduce inflammation, which can relieve pressure on that sciatic nerve. Magnesium can also support nerve function and reduce that excitability of the nerves, which can lessen and dampen pain and discomfort. Something like alpha-lipoic acid plays a significant role in managing peripheral neuropathy, particularly anything that's associated with diabetes or diabetic neuropathy. It is also a potent antioxidant that helps to reduce oxidative stress. Oxidative stress, meaning just like heightened levels of inflammation. What else? I'd say vitamin D, vitamin E, both potent anti-inflammatories as well. So off the top of my head, these are the ones I'm kind of calling off and would most likely see or observe in individuals that suffer from these conditions. I also want to mention, just going back to the correlation between the gut, right? So the reason I want to bring this up is because in my world, there's a saying that you are not what you eat, but you are what you absorb. And digestive health could possibly be one of the reasons why individuals suffer from deficiency or insufficient presentation of some of these raw materials needed to improve on their condition.
And that makes total sense. I mean, you answered my next question.
If weight management is one of your New Year goals, Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 amplifier can help. This science-backed formula supports metabolic balance, curbs cravings, and promotes healthy blood sugar levels, making it easier to stay consistent and in control. It helps give your body the boost it needs to keep you on track. Feel confident and energized this year with Quiksilver Scientific's GLP-1 amplifier. Get 10% off and free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. Again, that's tryqs.com/podcast for 10% off and free shipping. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Well, I was like, why do you think people are usually deficient in this? But then this also kind of brings up, especially if someone isn't absorbing their nutrients the way that they should, they're not getting the energy needs and not getting those raw materials. In a way, they kind of get into this stressful state, right? As a way to kind of just survive based off of the raw materials and fuel that they have available, which often results in the fact that we have cortisol levels rising. Like, we have that stress hormone that allows us to push forward. There's been a lot of studies that actually correlate with a lot of elevated cortisol and its association with elevated levels of chronic pain. And so it's kind of like, oh, here's all these different pieces of the puzzle that consists of a person's health.
Absolutely. And I think just to like further on the subject of chronic stress, elevated cortisol, this is where like the body's always trying to find balance. And if you're chronically stressed with elevated cortisol, it's going to shift funds being nutrients, funds being building blocks to try to regulate that, which means that it is now pulling away from something else, right? Which could be pulling away from the health of your nerves, pulling away from mitigating inflammation, pulling away from this other thing, because our body is always trying to fight and find equilibrium, which is the reason why when you come to healing, especially from a functional perspective, you are looking at all of these things together, because you can't just pull one string of the yarn and expect everything to fall into place. You've got to get your hands on everything at once.
And so in regards to that, where if you're not getting enough, your body is going to start to kind of leach those nutrients from different parts of your body. Let's talk about how to actually replenish them, right? So we live in a world of information. So from my perspective, we look at the food, which is number one. We look at supplements, but then you also brought up this third part, which is going to be the digestive health aspect of it. So when it comes to like managing someone who's been going through all these problems, if we look at those three categories, and if there's anything that I'm missing, let me know. But what is the order of operations that people should be looking at in regards to was addressing these deficiencies?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think this is also where a lot of people find absolute just overwhelm and utter overwhelm, and they just find themselves like paralysis in terms of what the next steps are. My belief is that the initial steps should not be complicated. Quite frankly, a lot of the initial steps to healing your body and providing it the space it needs to heal is quite honestly a lot of the free things that we can be doing on a day-to-day basis, right? If we're talking very basic nutritional focuses, it is eating a very whole foods-based diet. It is always a good foundation and entry point. It is not complicated. Focus on whole foods, lots of diversity, color and plant source foods and fibers. When it comes to the nuances of nutrition as it pertains to food sensitivities and tolerances, gut health, metabolic individuality, yes, you know, there might be things to do there, but non-processed whole foods is always the bedrock we should all be striving for and what we build upon to make individual variations and in interventions. When it comes to lifestyle practices, you know, shifting your circadian rhythm to match that of the rise and set of the sun, grounding, breath work, you know, lowering your toxin load by managing your alcohol consumption. These are very simple shifts that I think a lot of people de-emphasize their importance because they think that it's got to be this whole, you know, complete upheaval of their current lifestyle. It's like, no. Quite frankly, it's like the very small tweaks that can start moving you in the right direction.
100%. This is where I really brought that up. A lot of people are looking, and especially on the orthopedic side, what a lot of people look at, they're like, okay, what are the best exercises? Like, what's the exercise that I can do to fix this? And the reality is the fact that, especially when people are developing pain for a long period of time, pain's not going to go away overnight, but it's also, we have to look at the whole self, but there's 24 hours in a day. And so if you're doing one exercise during one specific part of the day, it's not going to account for the other 23 hours of the day. It's the same thing when it comes to food as well, because like, okay, you might have one really great meal, but if the rest of your eating habits are poor or you're not sleeping well, I'm glad that you're bringing this up because you're 100% right. People really overlook the power of these super simple things that we can do on a daily basis.
Correct. I always say that people like to major in the minors, you know, should I be intermittent fasting? Should I be eating this, that, and the other, you know, in specific order? And I'm just like, well, tell me what your foundations are. And if your foundations are still processed foods, foods in packages, not enough diversity and variety, not timed in a way that's like consistent meals so your body understands nutrients are coming in, I don't really want to talk about the other nuances just yet, you know, because there's still a lot of work to do on the more foundational front.
Speaking of foundations, a lot of times people are like really concerned with obviously the what they're doing, but also a second part of it is actually how. So when I'm looking at people, it's not just, okay, you can squat now, but like, this is how you're going to squat or this is how you're going to pick something up on the floor. It's really how you're going to go doing that, which then makes me think, especially when it comes to food, it's really also looking into the quality of the food as well. So now there's many different opportunities for us to be able to try to find quality food, but ultimately, what are some of the signs or things that we should be looking for to know that we're actually getting the best nutrients in our bodies through the food that we eat?
Well, if we're talking more in terms of like food sourcing, I would say yes, ideally if we can, strive for organic foods, if we have the capacity to go to farmers markets. Is this kind of like along the lines of what you're asking about? Yeah. Okay.
So we'll do like, it's like one sourcing, but also number two is like, how can we tell that we're actually like, our bodies are like tolerating it well? in that standpoint?
Yeah. Okay. So like from a sourcing perspective, yes, trying to eat organic. If we have the ability to gain locally grown, farm to table products, whether produce or animal products or meat products or whatever, that'd be ideal, just because it's been shown that the monoculture agricultural practice does strip a lot of our foods of its necessary nutrients. That is a whole conversation we do not have time for to talk about or lament about right now. So I would say from a sourcing perspective, and my whole concept is try to eat foods that are coming in their most natural form. You find them out in nature. That goes back to whole, minimally processed. When it comes to how do we know that the food is doing well for us, I think that is also a very nuanced conversation, because just, again, going back to things like gut health, you know, are there certain what would be considered whole, minimally processed, healthy foods that are triggering a response in you that is showing up as changes in bowel movements, inflammation, mucus production, you know, sinus related concerns? That is where I would say more geared towards working with someone that can get to the bottom of that. Again, that is the secondary level to shifting everything from processed to non-processed first. Then you go into kind of sorting out, okay, what of these healthy foods may not be agreeing with you and why might that be the case?
So you're looking at it as, you're looking at it from a scientific lens to be able to like truly, in a way, like test and retest, right? It's like, okay, here's your baseline. You're doing said action. It's like, how do you feel as a result, whether you're working with someone like you or you're doing this all on your own? You're trying to figure out, like, how do I feel as a result of said action? Does that sound about right?
Correct. Yeah. I would say tapping into your own body's messages, you know, which we are very, I'd say most of us are very disassociated with. We tend to try to gravitate towards something external to tell us how we feel or how to eat or how, there's a funny saying, it's like, we're the only living creatures that requires something to tell us what to eat to self-regulate. Whereas every other living creature tends to be able to find ways to do that, you know, naturally, which is kind of interesting. But yes, going by symptom presentation, lab values as well, you know, there's certain nutrient deficiencies or certain nutrient markers you can pull as baseline and retest those and see, are the dietary changes causing these values to trend in the direction that we are expecting them to?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing up the aspect of you needing an external cue to like validate like what we're feeling or like to acknowledge that something's changing. I often say this, one of the things that makes us human is our ability to actually go past any sort of self-regulation. And it's a great thing because it allows us to push human performance. It allows us to innovate, right? But also at a detriment, because we can really disassociate from all these cues.
Totally.
And, you know, it's only to a point where we're feeling completely horrible, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, by the time we're feeling completely horrible, we're hoping we're going to eat this one magic pill that's going to make us feel completely different. But it's an opportunity for us to say, what are we experiencing? What are those changes? Which is why it's so important, listeners, when you're working with someone like Jay, from a nutrition standpoint, you're working with someone like me when regards to pain management, it's not just going to be a switch. Are you experiencing pain or are you not? It's going to be more of a sliding scale. And it's a sliding scale with other knobs as well. So like an example, if you're dealing with sciatica pain and you're like, I'm at a 10 out of 10 pain, but after I did this stretch, I'm at a 9 out of 10 pain. Awesome. Then also maybe you went from not being able to walk at all to being able to go around your house without keeling over, right? So being able to look at it, and I think you said what the exact opposite of dissociation, associate yourself with the cues of what your body's telling you. And I really appreciate you bringing it up, Jamie. Thank you.
Yes. I think that is the functional medicine paradigm, is that you have to be an active participant in this process. And that requires you to do something that's uncomfortable, like slowing down and tuning into your body, which a lot of us are just, you know, that's so foreign because we are very go, 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 like put it in the back burner, come back to it later. We never do until it gets too loud and too bad that we have no choice but to listen at this point. So, yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the supplements. You know, there's probably some listeners out there being like, you know what, Jamie, I'm eating like the best food, but I'm still like deficient in some things. I think I turn to supplements. The supplement industry is extremely unregulated. It is unregulated. And so there's a lot of stuff out there. Do Google Bears different supplements? You're going to get sponsored ads. You're going to get people's reviews. Like there's all these different, again, there's a lot of noise. So how can someone actually filter that noise and vet and identify the companies that will actually help them the most?
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out because supplement quality is absolutely crucial. I always recommend working with a trusted healthcare professional who has access to pharmaceutical grade supplements, which is very different from going to your CVS or your Costco and getting something off the shelf. Look for brands that are transparent about their sourcing, use third-party testing, adhere to good manufacturing practices, which normally if they do, they will market and tell you that because it's important. Also avoid supplements with unnecessary fillers, artificial ingredients. You know, Centrum, which is like a very big multivitamin, on its ingredients has like two different artificial colors and dyes. It's like, that's a no-go, right? Why do we have these in our products? And then yes, just researching for professional guidance to choose the right types of supplements for your health, for your needs, the dosing, the sourcing, all of that is very important. So I'd say maybe broad stroke considerations are the ones that I had just voiced.
100%. Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in all the fancy marketing. I know that I was caught up in a lot of fancy marketing, especially in like my early 20s. I spent like hundreds of dollars on like the things that tasted like fruit punch and like the craziest things because they had like the craziest pictures on them too. So anyway, go through a trusted provider, really do your research on that. And so Jamie, like we've gone through a lot in regards to understanding that our bodies will absorb baricitinib nutrients. And in some cases we might need a little bit more and no, unless we actually get it looked at right through blood tests, stool tests, and all these various different things. It sounds kind of like a lot in regards to just trying to start making changes in regards to what we're putting in our body. So for the listeners out there who are really considering into looking deeper into nutrition and things that they're putting in their body and the role in their health, what are some of the key steps that they should take?
Yeah, sure. I would say that if you're looking to take the first step yourself to making some shifts, as mentioned, I would start by reducing your intake of foods that are highly processed packaged foods. Reduce or cease alcohol consumption. These are just high level things that I would say try to take that on yourself. Start adjusting your sleep wake cycle to better match the rise and fall of the sun. Ground yourself. I would also say too, with people that are trying to undertake adjustments to their nutrition, their lifestyle to address chronic health conditions, right? These are people that are suffering, have been suffering for quite some time. Mindset is a huge component and first entry point to this whole process and journey. Making yourself and your health a priority, not just an afterthought or something that gets the scraps of your time and attention. That mindset shift is huge for people that are trying to, again, get to the bottom of chronic disease and symptom states, I've found. Get yourself around individuals where your desired behavior is the norm behavior is huge because your ability to heal will only go as far as what your closest peers will allow. I truly believe that. I've seen it time and time again. It is all about the mindset. And if it's something And it's something that I found to be necessary as the first steps in a journey like this. And then when you're ready to consider working with a functional practitioner, a nutritionist, to assess your individual needs, all of that will feed forward to exponentiate all the work that you do with that individual.
Beautiful. And for listeners out there who are like, oh my gosh, Jamie, well, I think I want to take a step into the functional health stuff. Seems like you're the perfect person. How can listeners get in touch with you?
That's a great way to segue into that. So my website, where you can learn about my services and schedule a consultation, kind of learn more about myself, it is jamiecampbellnutrition.com. On social media, it is thefunctionalnutritionist_. You can give me a follow, also get a sense of what I'm all about there as well. But it'd be website and specifically social media, Instagram are the two places where I tend to show up.
Awesome. Liz, if you did not get a chance to write that down, I'm going to go ahead and put the links in the show notes. I'm also going to be adding some other really cool research articles that we came across that really kind of compounds off of what Jamie has shared with us. Listeners, when it comes to dealing with pain, it's a multifaceted issue. It's not just one stretch. It's not just one medication. It's not just one food that you put in your body. It's the entire gamut. And so if you are struggling with trying to manage all of this, take a step back, and look at everything that you're doing and see what else can you do to make the change. You'll be surprised at the many opportunities that you find when just taking a moment saying, what else can I do to make things possible? And there's people like Jamie, people like myself, who exist to help people like you. So Jamie, thank you. This was awesome. I learned so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. This was awesome.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day.
No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.